Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
That's right, Owl Post for the week is freshly delivered once again, and I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as she is every single week, the one and only, Drea Kaufman.
Hello!
Hello, hello, hello. How are you?
Good, or as my little one says, oh, hi!
That's awesome.
She does that anytime someone
That's
walks
fantastic.
In the room now.
Oh,
like
my gosh.
You see her for the first time. It's ridiculous.
Oh, that's great. It was funny. There is a trail not far from our house that I usually like run or walk down. And I'm doing that the other day. And I pass this family and the little kid in their stroller just starts like waving at me and going, hi, hi. So it was pretty cute.
Hi,
so
hi.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's yeah.
They're at that cute age where they say hi to everything and bye to everything. And
yeah, it's adorable. It's adorable. Mm-hmm. It's too bad that's not adorable anymore for normal people, but, you know. Well, before we get to chapter 25, Dre and I adorably are going to talk about. You can find us all over the place. Make sure that if you have an opportunity, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts to the show, and hit us up with a star rating review over on iTunes or Apple Podcasts. That helps people find the show. You can find us on Twitter at Join Nerd Party. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty. We're at thenerdparty.com, where you can find all the shows happening, of course, on The Nerd Party, as well as send us an email over at thenerdparty.com/contact, choose a show, choose Owl Post, and that comes to Drea and I. And Drea, we did just get an email that I wanted to just share with everybody. We got it from Chelsea, and she just mentioned how that she really loves our deep dives into the meaning and thought process of the show. She talked about Neville and his parents and about how, you know, with Harry, it's a little bit different. You know, she had a different side to think of, you know, Harry's parents being dead changes things, whereas Neville, you know, his parents are still alive and they're still suffering, and that, you know, in some ways she thinks, you know, him not sharing about that experience may be him just trying to avoid the pity party and people looking at him as he's, you know, damaged and feeling, you know, the kind of that difference almost like you have people who are alive, but are almost kind of soulless, almost as if they've been kissed by dementors, really. I mean, because there's not much there. And so I was just thinking about that. She was just thinking about how, you know, it's brave for both of them to kind of suffer with the loss of their parents. And it's, she really loves how, Rowling shows that it's okay to not always share your story, and it's okay to have a dark past, and that you still have to get up and get to work. You just don't wallow in it. And, you know, it is an interesting point because, you know, both Harry and Neville kind of do that. And actually, it's a great thought because actually, as we dig into this chapter, we see Neville really start getting at it with the Dumbledore's army and really putting in the effort to learn. And I think, you know, it's, I think she has some good points.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's definitely different. And I mean, I'm sure Neville seeing all the attention and everything that's come to Harry, which will also kind of be something that happens in this chapter too, is just not something that was desirable for him. He kind of wanted to just dissipate and fade into the background. Yeah, I definitely agree. We do get a lot more of Neville here too in this chapter, and a lot more of the impact that maybe Neville's parents had on him and on how he, you know, shows up and what he decides to do. So, you know, it's definitely going to be a Neville heavy chapter, and I think we're going to see more and more of him as we go. And I love that. And, you know, and I love the different, you know, approach and thought process that you bring to this, Chelsea. So thank you so much for the insight. It's always valuable to hear how on the mark or not quite on the mark, or just even how different maybe to look at some of these things. So, definitely valued. And I love hearing anything from our fans or our listeners, I guess.
It's great. We really do appreciate it. You know, one of the things that this chapter really does is that it immediately answers the question about what he who must not be named was so excited about. And there has been a mass breakout at Azkaban, and people like Augustus Rookwood, Dolloff, you even got somebody like Bellatrix Lestrange who has escaped. So if we thought, you know, quote unquote bad, you know, Sirius Black escaping a couple of years ago was bad, well, this is awful. And not only that, of course, but then you've got the Daily Prophet who's blaming Black for something that, of course, he had nothing to do with. But of course, since he's, you know, linked with Bellatrix Lestrange, they're related, being cousins, they think that he's the one responsible for helping get them all out. And so it just shows you how bad things are getting when you have a breakout this badly. Yeah, it's not good. It's really not good.
Yeah, it's not good. And you can tell right away that when we see this news, we see that, you know, Dumbledore and McGonagall are kind of whisper talking very seriously. And was it Grubbly Plank basically wears, or Professor Sprouts wears her eggs because she's just so enthralled with what's going on. And, you know, even some of the kids are kind of nervous, those who have lost parents. Like we had the one, Bones, Susan Bones.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
Who lost her whole family to this situation. You know, kind of on this brink of, you know, she says something to Harry about, like, I don't know how you did this. Like, I'm just having to do this. And, like, I don't know how you've had, like, how you dealt with being this, like, fame, if you will. I mean, it's really had a dramatic impact on everything. And they sort of expected Umbridge to be different. And she was maybe a little bit more controlling now, but not really all that different. Maybe a little more pissed off, I guess, if you will. But not that drastic of a difference, not as much as they kind of were expecting her to be. So it was interesting.
Yeah, like you said, I think it's fascinating to watch the effect that this has on lots of people. You know, as you mentioned, you got the professors who are up at the table. You know, Dumbledore's talking to McGonagall, and like you said, Professor Sprouts, you know, got ketchup all over her because, you know, things are reading this article, and just everybody, there's murmurs around the Great Hall, and Hermione keeps reading the paper. And we hear that somebody else has died, and it was a ministry worker who was at St. Mungo's, who they actually met while they were there, this Broderick Bode, and he was found dead, strangled by a plant that had been delivered, you know, to him anonymously, and it turns out that it was Devil's Snare and not Flitterbloom. I love the names of the plants.
I know, right?
And how clever it was to kind of, you know, kill somebody like this. But, you know, it turns out he also worked, Ron tells us, at the Department of Ministries. So, like, there's a lot of things that are just starting to pile up that are happening now in this book where it almost feels like we're getting that mudslide of stuff. Like, it's like we've been setting up, and now it's time for the dominoes to start to slowly fall.
Well, it's interesting too, because the reaction to this sort of news is kind of varied across the three, and it's interesting their different reactions, right? Because, you know, Hermione is kind of the one sharing this information, and Harry's sort of like, oh man, that's like horrible and terrible, and like, I'm confused. Why would anyone want to do that? And then Ron's like, we could have prevented it, guys, if we had just recognized that it was Devil's Snare, because we know what that is, because we're crazy kids. You know, we could have saved him. And Hermione was the one who stepped in and was like, that's not our job. Like, our job's not to save everyone. We can't own the fact that this guy died because we didn't recognize that it was Devil's Snare. We'd never have expected to find it in a potted plant in a hospital, you know, like, don't take that on. But her point was like, you're losing sight of the fact that, like, he was murdered. Somebody went to the effort of covering up this very clever murder with Devil's Snare in plain sight. Like, there was something about him that they needed quiet. And we find out that he actually was a friend of Ron's dad, who was one of the Unspeakables.
which is really fascinating. But apparently Hermione doesn't have time for that because she's got to send a letter. And she runs off. And I kind of love how Ron's like, I hate it when she does that.
I love that he's like, he's just like, I wish one of these times she would just stop and spend a few minutes to tell us what's going on. Like, Harry's just like, I just, okay, bye. It's like that person who runs off and you're like, all right, bye. Great to see you. Whatever.
Yeah, thanks so much for sharing what you're going to do. Appreciate it. It is interesting because they do run into Hagrid, though, on their way out, the boys, and they find out from him that he's on probation as a professor, which, you know, when you thought you couldn't get more bad news, we piled this on top of that. So just it's not been a good day.
Yeah, just when you think you couldn't hate Umbridge anymore, she piles that on.
But this has a fascinating impact on the school because Harry's noticing the fact that obviously certain people are excited beyond all measure about this, you know, people like Draco. But you're also seeing some things where professors are kind of talking to each other in the corridors. You're also seeing students where, and you know, normally Harry's used to this year, people kind of like talking about him basically behind his back and talking about the news and then kind of looking at him like, you little turd, you little liar. But now he's
you little turd.
Yeah. But now he's overhearing people's conversations and they're not so enamored with the prophet's version of what's going on. And they're kind of being moved towards the fact that, this just seems so unlikely that actually the more likely solution is what we heard from Dumbledore and Harry last year, that it's got to be Voldemort. And so Harry's feeling this shift in the wind, you know, that, you know, the winds were blowing east, but now they're blowing west, you know, and that.
Yeah. And not even if people don't believe him, they know more is going on than they're being told. So they don't know who to believe, but at least now it's not as clear cut and Harry's not quite a crazy nutbag as maybe everyone thought.
And that's the thing that is the fact that the mood is kind of shifting towards that for Harry is just giving him a better feel. And my favorite part about this is the reaction we get from our High Inquisitor is to give us a new edict, which is number 26, if you're counting, which is that teachers are banned from giving students any information about something that is not strictly related to the subjects they are paid to teach, which I love the way that the kids react to this. They're like, well, that's great, because now she can't tell us not to do things in her class, like, you know, playing Exploding Snap, which that doesn't have anything to do with her class.
Oh, that was so funny. Was it Lee Jordan who did that, I think? And I like how he ends up kind of suffering the same way Harry suffered this year. He recommends the soothing element that Hermione gave him when he was going through the same thing. You know, so he's kind of able to sympathize with him on that and sort of say that without saying that, like, hey, I feel you, buddy. Try this.
Yeah, I do. I appreciate that as well. And we get something that we'll see, you know, from the Fantastic Beasts series, which is the essence of Mertlap. So, you know, now we know where that comes from, which is really cool. It's fascinating because we also get Umbridge really cracking down as hard as she can on certain people. And Harry even thinks of it as the sense that she wants to bring every single possible thing under her personal control at Hogwarts. And that means that she's at every divination class and every care of magical creatures class, making it miserable for both Hagrid and Professor Trelawney. So if you thought they had it bad before, now it's gotten even worse. And it's honestly making these classes kind of unbearable to the point where it's like, these kids aren't even learning anything in these classes because their teachers aren't really teaching them anything because, well, they have this, you know, yeah,
they can't.
Exactly.
Like, they can't.
It really is kind of, it's just kind of disgusting, honestly. So, and I really like that Harry's response to this actually is that his only revenge is to redouble his efforts with Dumbledore's army. And the improvement that he's not only seeing himself, but in others in this class is astounding. Like, people are working twice as hard now. And as we mentioned at the beginning, it's Neville who is really pushing it himself. In fact, he learns the shield charm only a little less fast. That's really a bad way to say that. But Hermione's the only one that masters that charm faster than he does. Like, that just shows you how quickly he is progressing in this subject because of what's happened, which I think is fascinating.
He is just taking this as he doesn't say anything about anything. He says something to the effect of, like, there's no word spoken about running into anyone at, you know, during the holidays. Nobody says anything to him. He doesn't say anything to them. He just basically puts his head down and makes it work. And so it's really interesting that she just sort of just makes it happen. You know, he just focuses and channels all that energy. And it's really amazing the progress he makes when he just sort of has this unbridled rage, if you will.
Yeah. No, I think that's a great way to put it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's also frustrating, though, for Harry here, because as well as things are going there, the occlumency lessons are not going well at all. And in fact, he feels like things are just getting worse for him, because every night he's just walking down the same corridor in this stupid dream. And he's like, I really, really wish that this... It would just be great if the door finally opened, because I'm tired of walking down the same corridor every night and having nothing happen. And Hermione's, you know, like, trying to say, well, like, it's probably maybe it's like an illness where, you know, it gets worse before it gets better. And I like that Ron finally is just like, I mean, maybe Snape's not trying to help. Maybe he's just trying to make it worse on purpose. We don't know. And of course, Hermione won't have any of that, because she's like, Dumbledore trusts him, and if we can't trust Dumbledore, who can we trust? But I don't think...
I do really like, though, that she points out that, like, every time you've thought Snape was the bad guy, Ron, he was never the bad guy. Like, every time you've gone down this path, you've always been wrong. So maybe we should just stop trying to go down this path. And he doesn't really seem entirely convinced until, you know, she presents that if we can't trust Dumbledore argument. But, yeah, I do think it's funny that she's like, you've said that before.
Yes.
And it's never true. Yeah.
Well, but I appreciate, I think it's smart of Ron to at least ask the question, because it's not getting better for Harry. And so, like, to at least entertain the question, like, that there could be that possibility is something I think maybe even as a reader, you know, especially at this point, if you haven't finished the series, you might be thinking yourself, you know, like, is this really helping Harry? Is Dumbledore finally made his first big mistake? You know, and I think that's a valid question, because regardless of what character is what in any series, you know, nobody's infallible. And so it does make us wonder if, you know, Dumbledore's just made a huge mistake here with all of this. So, yeah.
But you think that's where the chapter ends, but no it keeps going, because this is the longest chapter we've
read
so
far. This is a chapter where we finally get to go to Hogsmeade. Harry and Cho have their date. But before they go on their date, Hermione's like, oh, hey, Harry, could you, like, meet me at the Three Broomsticks, you know, maybe around midday? I've got something really important to tell you. And he's like, I'm going on a date. She kind of might want me to hang out with her all night. She's like, oh, you could just bring her along. That's fine. Like, and then leaves. And Harry's put in this really awkward position of a friend who apparently needs him to do something really important, but he's also gone in on his, well, this is Harry's first real date with anybody, with a girl he actually really likes.
Right, and he doesn't really have a good, like, he knows he can trust Hermione and it'll be okay and that there's, like, nothing to it, but, like, he doesn't have a good way to speak to that other than, I trust her.
Mm-hmm. And of course, it is kind of sad that Ron can't join them at all because he's got to practice Quidditch, which, you know, Harry doesn't feel too bad about because he hasn't been able to play Quidditch for months now. So,
and I do love that that actually becomes mm-hmm. one of the things that him and Cho talk right. about as they head to Hogsmeade is the fact that, like, he really misses Quidditch, like, a lot. And that they kind of talk about how she knew that he was told to knock her off her broom in their first match. And it's just, it becomes this really cute thing. And he even mentions, like, it's really easy to talk to her. Like, they have a lot in common. He found it surprisingly easy to talk to her. So,
and something that was fascinating, and I have to say, you know, Cho kind of surprised me a little bit here when she's like, you know, it's a little bit funny that we had one person escape from Azkaban and there were Dementors everywhere. And now we have 10 people escape, and that you got people like Bellatrix Lestrange, and there are no Dementors anywhere. It's a really good point, Cho. Very well reasoned, very well thought out. I wonder why that is.
And I think even Harry kind of is like, oh yeah, that's interesting. When she says that, he's like, oh yeah, yeah. And then, like, as he starts to think on it, it, like, it's more and more, he sees all their faces kind of in all of the store windows, and more and more he thinks about it, the more he realizes that the ministry has just completely lost control of the guards of Azkaban. And he's like, well, that's not good.
Yeah.
Like, that's really not good.
Well, and you know, I liked it you said that, because this is one of those places, again, where Harry just really starts to put some pieces together. You know, he takes the logical assumptions that make sense with all the information he's been given. And yeah, you can tell here that the ministry has really botched this. And we get the sense of just how badly they've botched it and how much they have lost control of the situation, you know, right. because a breakout like that couldn't have happened without the help of the Dementors. And so,
not to that extent, right? Like, I don't know if we ever really got explained how Sirius got out beyond him being an animagus, and we kind of assume it had something to do with that. So, you know, for it to happen in, you know, tenfold in the same way with no good explanation, like, there is just no other way that happened that way.
Yes. Yeah. You know, I think that it is really interesting that happened. But, you know, we also get the date, and they go to this place to get some coffee. Apparently, it's been very much decorated for Valentine's Day. Madam Puddingfoot? Yeah, something like that. Anyway, you can yell at me on Twitter how wrong I was. It's so funny because Harry is so uncomfortable, and there are all these couples around them that are like holding hands and making out. I mean, just snogging, to put it in the British term. And he is just so uncomfortable, and he's finally is like, you know, like, around lunchtime, would you want to come to the Three Broomsticks with me? Like, Hermione asked me to meet her, and she said you could come. And he's like, oh, well, that's nice of her. And things just start to go downhill.
Well, but
from
she
here.
Had tried to talk to him about Cedric before that, and he just didn't want to do it. Like, he was just not interested in talking about Cedric with anyone, let alone Cho.
Right. Well, and then she gets mad at him for that, too. Because the fact that he mentions how he's talked to, like, Ron and Hermione about that, and she's like, well, you won't talk to me about it. You'll talk to Hermione Granger about it. And it's just like, Harry doesn't realize what's going on here, because he also can't figure out mm-hmm. why she wants to talk about Cedric, since every time she talks about Cedric, all she does is cry. And she's like, well, but I thought you would have understood why I needed to talk about Cedric with somebody. And it's just, it turns out to be the worst date in the history of dates for Harry. And before he knows it, she's stormed off and he's just left picking up the check.
It's just like a terrible date, like the world's worst date. Like, I feel like both of them kind of messed this one up. Like, wow. Wow. It went south really quickly.
Well, and it goes to show that, you know, they're in a place where, well, look, Harry has no inclination on how to handle women whatsoever, because nobody's had any inclination to teach him how to handle a date with a woman in the first place or understand what they're like. And the only woman he has any experience with is Hermione. And let's just say that Hermione is unique among many women because she's not quite as emotionally driven as most people. She's much more logically driven and therefore doesn't react the same ways. And so where would Harry have any idea how to react with any of this? Plus, on top of that...
Well, she does. So to back up just a smidge, Hermione does have emotional reactions.
Oh, absolutely. I'm not...
Like, she does. Just,
but not normally.
Yeah, no. And I mean, think about...
I mean, they're not related about, to, you know, to the, Harry. The, like, they're always related to Ron.
They're not related to Harry, right. Yeah. I mean, when you think about, like, Victor Crumb and Ron and that little triangle that happened during Goblet of Fire, like, that got really emotionally intense, right? And, you know, she seems to be able to see the logic through more emotion than maybe anyone her age, male or female. I mean, look at how Ron sort of lost it during that time, too, and was totally just oblivious to what was happening. You know, like, I think it's true for everything, but I definitely think in this sense, Cho had a very strong emotional reaction, and Harry just does not know what to do with that. Because if you think about all the people, I mean, Mrs. Weasley is probably the closest thing to a highly emotionally responsive person that he gets, and she is not the same as dealing with someone his own age who has a strong emotional reaction to things. You know, I think the next one up would maybe even be Ron as having the strongest emotional reaction to things in Harry's world. So yeah, it's really interesting. And the first time he kind of has to deal with this dynamic and this dichotomy of male female and dating, and he just doesn't know what to do.
Well, and it just makes sense, you know. And like you said, it's not just all on Harry here. They both don't handle the situation well because neither of them really seems to understand how to just kind of like open up and explain what's going on with them, you know? And, you know, Cho's acting a certain way, but she's not actually telling Harry why she's feeling a certain way or anything. So like, they're just both kids who, you know, are on a date and they've had some really bad things happen to them that happen to be sadly connected. And they don't understand it. And I just kind of, you know, poor Harry walks out and he's like, women. Like, it's just like, he just has no clue what just happened.
Yeah, it's so interesting that it just breaks down and he's just like, I don't know what to do. Okay, I'm just going to go on. And then tells, you know, shows up to the time with Hermione, and Hermione's like, where's Joe? And he's like,
yeah, I love that he's like, I don't really want to talk about that. And it turns out,
well, before he gets to meet Hermione, he actually runs in to Hagrid kind of up at the bar in the pub, who's clearly having a bad day.
Yes. And he tries to, like, he really tries to, what's funny is that Harry does the exact thing he couldn't do with Cho here, which was he, like, talks to Hagrid. He's trying to get down to what's going on. And, you know, Hagrid just kind of keeps going on about things like, oh, we're kind of similar. We're both orphans, you know, how important family is. Harry's like, yeah, that's really true. It is really important, you know. Hagrid, what's up with your face? Why do you have all these bruises and stuff? He's like, oh, I've got a rough job. He's like, oh, I'll be seeing you later. And he just kind of stumbles out. And turns out that as he gets to the table with Hermione, she's not all alone. She's actually there with Luna Lovegood and Rita Skeeter, which I don't know if anybody expected when she's like, hey, will you meet me at the Three Broomsticks today, that this would be the company he would run into.
Yeah, he definitely was like, huh?
And I absolutely love that we finally get the answer of what it was that Hermione was interested in doing, because I think she actually has kind of a brilliant idea here.
Yeah, she does. You know, she, first of all, I love her sort of, I don't want to say controlling, but her sort of dominating the relationship between Rita Skeeter and what's happening, right? She's calling her out very, very blunt, very like sort of aggressive. Or at least assertive as to what's happening here. And she was like, nope, you're not going to do that. Nope, you're not going to write about that. No, you're not. You're definitely not. So I thought that was really, I thought that was pretty great of just how she handles it. And it turns out that her sort of genius idea is that Rita Skeeter is going to write the real story of what Harry went through. And she is going to do it for free. And she's going to give it to Luna, who's going to have her dad publish it in the Quibbler. And, you know, and Hermione is not going to tell the ministry that Rita Skeeter is a unregistered animagus.
That's my favorite part, is that, like you said, Hermione dictating this whole thing and saying, oh, yeah, I mean, of course you're going to do it for free. Otherwise, you'll be basically giving the Daily Prophet a rather in-depth account of what it's like to be like in Azkaban.
Yeah, I'm sure they'd pay you a lot of money for that firsthand account. Like, she just pulls no punches.
And it's so great to finally get Rita Skeeter, get her comeuppance, basically. I think it's just fantastic. I really love that. And, you know, we're kind of left with Harry telling his story to Rita. And I also love that she's not allowed to use the quick quills. She has to tell the story as Harry is giving it.
Verbatim.
Yes. Not give any of, you know, her classic embellishments, which I think is going to make this really interesting to see how this turns out. You know, what does the article come, because I think the thing that she really sets us up for here is that people are, if the students at Hogwarts are looking for another way that things went down, you absolutely know now that other people in the world, other than just these students, are looking for another explanation. And we kind of got that with the Stan Chungpite conversation on the night bus as well. And so we really see that people might actually be kind of hungry for a more plausible explanation than the one they've been getting in the Daily Prophet.
Well, and we even kind of glossed over this, but early on in this conversation is sort of part of their banter. You know, Rita Skeeter confirms that, in fact, Fudge has been in the ministry, have been leaning very heavily on the Daily Prophet to sort of paint a picture as they felt was appropriate, which we all kind of had some idea was happening, but now it's definitely confirmed that they're sort of in the pocket of government. You can't really trust what they're printing. So that even further, you know, sort of solidifies Hermione's like objective that she wants to get the real story out there in another way. You know, and I love Luna just kind of sitting back being like, oh, Daddy will be so pleased. Like, she knows what's happening, but she has this like different approach to it that makes her so very Luna. That's just, oh, she's just very happy that she's getting a new story to put in the Quibbler.
Yeah.
Like,
it's all really right. Funny.
She doesn't really care about the rest of it.
I just love anything Luna. And yeah, she really kind of makes this end here. And we're kind of left on that of Harry telling his story. And then what will happen next? So I think the reaction to this is going to be really fascinating to see as we get into the next few chapters. And so much, I feel like, you know, within the last 2 weeks, so much has happened, I feel like, and it leaves me so excited to be getting into this last half of the book. Like, I'm always excited.
Well, and you've indicated there's been lots of little Easter eggs, both explained and left at the same time in these past couple chapters, that I think we're only going to kind of see that pick up as well. Things are going to kind of come together and make sense. And at the same time, you're going to get more pieces that will make things in the future make sense. And, you know, this is just a good tipping point for sort of the climax that we're reaching in the series. So,
yeah, absolutely. So really excited to get there. Hey, if you know, if anybody wants to catch up with you there online, talk to you, see how things are going, talk Harry Potter, where can they find you, Drea?
You can find me on Twitter at PCFChick or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's Kaufman.
And you could find me on Twitter, Instagram, on Letterboxd under the same name, MattRushing02. I'm here on the network doing another show called Aggressive Negotiations, talking about Star Wars each and every week with John Mills. I am on the Trek FM network doing two shows. One is called The Orb with Chris Jones, talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. I'm also doing the 602 Club, talking about all things geeky that we love, not just one franchise, but as many as we can fit in there on that show. And you can find me doing Cinema Stories with my good friend Courtney, all about films, but through the lens of faith. Thank you, though, so much for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.